what's happened is...
What's happened?
Well, this podcast started off as... chat that we would do before writing sessions, in a way.
No, it didn't.
I'm on lecture mode, Ben. Mm-hmm. It's not really... This isn't really an interactive bit of chat.
Constructing the origin story.
People want to know.
How did it start?
I'm myth making. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the mythos.
Yep.
Behind Tree Bean Salad podcast is.
Are you going to talk about when you discovered BP in a favela, lying low?
That's right. Yeah.
Ragged.
He was hiding underneath a wicker carpet.
Mm-hmm.
A wicker section of flooring. It was very similar to that scene in Star Wars where they're hiding under the floor of the Millennium Falcon, but everything's made of wicker.
Is that how you imagine a favela to be? Or rather, favela. It's not even favela. I think it's favela.
I didn't have a strong mental picture of any of these things, so what I tend to do in any situation where I don't have a strong mental picture of it is offer them the Millennium Falcon, because I feel like I roughly know my way around that.
Made of wicker. But it's possible that you're mixing up a favela and... Yeah. The inside of a conservatory in Surrey.
that's possible as well, yeah. That's another thing that I haven't got a strong mental picture of, so again, I'll be going with the Millennium Falcon, but this time it'll be made of glass. And that'll be within the one made of wicker.
And in your mental picture of the Millennium Falcon that you draw every time you don't have a strong mental picture of what you're talking about,
yep.
Is Chewbacca there?
He is, but he's hiding.
Right. Okay.
Well, because of the...
Because the underground hiding bit is pivotal, it seems. That's your sort of jumping off point.
It's the underground hiding bit. One of my earliest disappointments in life, I was given the Millennium Falcon for Christmas, the toy of the Millennium Falcon for Christmas, not the actual Millennium Falcon. And it was basically one of the greatest moments of my life.
Of course.
I mean, it was absolutely incredible. It was an incredible moment.
You were 21 at the time, so...
Hey!
Hey! Come on.
Oh,
yeah. Very nice.
Humour.
Really great. There's nothing to add, really. I think we can call off. I think we can say that was Three Bean Salad podcast. Yeah, see you next week.
The rest of the day off.
Yeah. Because that was sense-fucking-sational.
Captain Print.
I was literally in my head thinking, should I resist saying that? Like, it's not a great thing to say. It's there for me to say.
It's always available, isn't it?
But in the past, Ben, you would have had that and you'd have said, should I resist? And you will have been able to resist.
Yeah. I know, what's happened?
That's key. That's the pivotal detail here. You've weighed it up in your head and you thought, do you know what? I'm going to do it.
There's no way. Seasons 1 through 9, you would have resisted that, wouldn't
you? I think you've crossed a Rubicon developmentally, yeah.
It's the slow rot.
Yeah, so why is that? Does that tell me that one day I will be a father?
It's hard to interpret, isn't it? There's a lot. The only thing it brings to mind for me is the release of the announcement recently of a new studio album by the Rolling Stones. Feels like a similar moment.
Okay.
How do you mean?
That's one where I've taken the plunge and I've thought, I'm going to have to work this one out. I'm going to have to retrofit the actual point I'm making here. But
are you saying the Rolling Stones should have resisted making a new album, but they just couldn't help themselves? But ultimately, it's to the benefit of nobody.
Again, seasons 1 through 9, I'd have had an answer for you to that. But right now. The stakes don't feel high enough for me to make the mental effort to actually answer it.
Just before we go, we are dancing around something at the moment, actually.
Yeah, yeah. There's something in the air, isn't there?
It's over 27 degrees.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think the audience would have already picked up on that. That's the reason I made that little joke.
Yeah.
That's the reason why Henry can't think of anything to say.
Yeah.
We're working in conditions under which we should not even be working.
If we were unionised, there's no way we'd be.
No.
I mean, Mike would still be turning up. We'd be shouting scab at him. Wouldn't he?
Guys, look at this. So I've got a little thermometer on my desk.
Yeah.
64.
That's the percent humidity.
Fucking hell. Is that 65? Is that your internal organs age? And it's just gone up by one, Ben. It's gone up again. Ben, you're 66.
Did you make that joke because... I mean, did that further age your organs, that joke? Or did you make that joke because of the age of your organs? Which way around is it?
Your organs have got wind of it. They're trying to catch up. They're trying to catch up with your joke age. 67. You've got a joke age of 67 now, Ben. I heard something recently. I'm 68. Fucking hell, you're going to die on air. You're going to die before we hit the email.
This is amazing broadcast.
This is incredible.
Keep going.
It also has just hit 27 degrees, as you'll see. So we have to turn off the recording now.
Your body age has gone up to 69.
It's gone to 70.
We didn't even have time to make a 69 joke. We didn't even have time. It's 70 already. 71.
It's genuinely going up and up and up.
Just to paint a picture for the listener, I just so you know what's going on, I've got a temperature gauge and it's also got a humidity gauge on it.
Oh, so the humidity was going up?
Yeah.
But it's going up steadily. It's going to be over 100 soon, and then what happens?
Also, Ben, I've got nature's humidity gauge, by the way.
That's hair, isn't it? But you're quite poorly set up for that.
God, again, you wouldn't have made a baldness joke 1 through 9. You wouldn't be slagging me off for being bald.
Not this early in the episode. It might have been the sort of 40 minute lag time.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's when those bald comments come out. Yeah, which is the shininess of your face, which is, it's a bit like an eclipse. Your face is not in any other way, but it's a bit like the moon right now, in the sense that it's got shadow over half of
yeah.
it.
We've yeah. all got that thing. Ben's complexion is very much... man who was strangled 36 to 48 hours ago, I'd say.
but non-fatally.
Well, fatally.
Sort of waxy, sort of Lenin in his casket type thing.
Yeah. And also, the body after death will continue making jokes about baldness and will continue to quote it. There are certain reflex jokes that you don't need to have brain life to actually do.
That's what she said, and so on, that kind of thing.
Yeah. As the actress said to the bishop. Yeah.
All the classics.
It is. It's like your face is about like a sundial or
a humidity dial.
Because the humidity reflects, obviously moisture reflects light more rapidly than dryness.
Has he got any Latin inscriptions on his face? We should check.
I think there's actually some rather ribald Latin graffiti on his on his left side of his chin.
My face is very clammy at the moment.
It's incredibly clammy. And the clamminess is going up. And the shine is getting brighter, essentially, the white shine.
And also now my glasses are steaming up.
Yeah, I'm just live. I noticed your left.
Only on
your
the left. Left
yeah. Just now, your left glasses are steaming up. So it's like an eclipse. It's moving across your face right to left. Your left specs have just completely steamed up. I have quite a matte finish, weirdly.
You do? I don't know how you've achieved that.
It might be a setting on my Mac. Whereas I've got almost no shine at all. I'm weirdly, incredibly flat, like a black hole. There's no light isn't kind of going in or escaping my face, it would seem. It's like looking at a map of a bit of the universe that hasn't been discovered or something. Do you know, there's no data.
Which they normally mark with puce, don't they?
They almost always been this level of puce.
It's what it's like, Henry. It's like perfect. It's like sort of, what's the word? Like
two perfect ham.
A perfect breakfast ham.
Yes. Yeah. A ham which is like...
There should be some sort of marbling or something to cut around, but there isn't.
Exactly.
It's too processed.
In one of those fast food ham, Spanish ham joints, there'd be a photo of some ham above this, above the till. You'd know the ham's not going to look like it.
No, but I'd say you wouldn't want the ham to look like that, Henry. That's
not
ideal ham by any means. No, that's ham that's been created into a loaf of some sort.
Is that the kind of ham which... If you came across it on a breakfast buffet on holiday, you'd end up staring at it. You'd stare at it, and then you'd sort of feel like you're falling into it.
Mm-hmm. And then put it on your forehead and claim it was your complexion.
Yeah.
Which is what's happened today, right?
This has taken 10 years off my dating profile age. Susan, I'm leaving you.
Oh, maybe it's a setting on my computer. Oh, it's the hams again.
But I think that's what happened. And then you'd end up dating a Spanish waitress from the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Conchita,
you'd end up going on a tour of Ham Towers, the ham ancestral home from her forefathers, which is no longer in her family, but you can still visit from the national, well, the ham, el Trustio del Ham, the Spanish equivalent of the National Trust. You'd go on a tour of that. In the attic, you would come across a box, well, you'd sneak into the attic.
Box of dry pigs.
From the attic, you'd come across a box of dry pigs. you'd try and clench, you'd hold on to one of them, it would burst into just into pig powder or ham powder in your hands, but inside it would be a bunch of letters written on ham from during the Spanish Civil War, which would reveal that Conchita actually still does have a claim on the house. So you chuck all the visitors out, and you and Conchita are now the sir and madam of Ham Towers, which you turn into a, you turn it back into a, you give it back to the National Ham Trust, because it's very hard, expensive to maintain, especially the waitress's salary.
And but in the meanwhile, you're throwing everyone out. You've demolished the coffee shop because they didn't have to rebuild.
Completely wrecked the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've just had time to replace all the ham tapestries with a massive widescreen telly. So you basically slightly ruined it. Conchita falls out with you.
The slice of ham one day falls off your forehead, revealing your real complexion.
Mm. Yeah, and it hasn't been improved by the having ham stuck to it for a decade. And then what happens is Conchita's brother comes in, and you knew this was coming. Conchita comes in. Like most Spanish brothers, you know, 70% of his life is spent sort of...
avenging his sister.
Avenging sisters and, you know, repairing honours, you know, sort of just doing sort of honour-based sister reparation work. He starts slapping you hard. So you he's got loads of sisters, so it's taking him a while to get round to you. Anyway, he's slapping you, slap, Henry, what the fuck? Henry, you've been staring at that ham for 5 minutes. And all that's happened is you've been staring, you're still in the breakfast buffet.
So who's slapping you?
Conchita.
I went back to square one.
She wants to get married. She can visit Ham Towers, and you see trapped in a ham loop. But it's that sort of complexion, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
I think it's a bit more pate than ham, actually, now I look at it. It's got that element of grey in it, you know?
Could have said that earlier. Mike's complexion, can I say? He's just gone a bit out of focus suddenly when I said that.
Have I?
Is it a defence setting?
It's the save blushes setting.
Is it the save blushes setting? Mike's looking quite pink.
Yeah, I feel quite pink.
Is he? But it's a healthy pink.
Is no. It's a forgotten sun cream pink, is it?
Is it forgotten sun cream?
Yeah, it's an overheated 27 degrees pink, is what I am, I think. It's very airless.
Do you have classic British man reaction to excessive heat, Mike, which is patchy pink blotches all over your body?
Yeah.
And random sweat patches. So I've seen this on a shirt, so random.
Yeah, well, I'm genetically, technically speaking, I'm a build of Polish and Welsh. So, I mean, my suitability for the sun is absolute zero. Can't cope with it at all.
The two of the pinkest.
Yeah, I come out of it looking like a slapped up rhubarb, basically, very quickly. Bad business.
It's a shame we'll never see bronzed beans, isn't it? No, I don't think any of the three of us will ever really be bronzed.
Surely you could bronze, couldn't you, Henry?
I can't bronze.
I've never seen you bronze. No, I can't bronze.
I've got Turkish heritage, but there is a street. There is a pale.
You're the fair Turk.
There are fair Turks, but there's. I think I must have fair Turk lineage because I cannot tan.
In the same way that kind of Boris Johnson is Turkish, and
I know he's very fair. I wish that wasn't any other sort of. example to reach for.
Yeah. What were we talking about? Oh, your Millennium Falcon toy. And then I made an absolute podcast-kidding little quip. I'm sorry, maybe I won't say anything else for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I think it's probably safest, isn't it?
Okay.
No, it was a chat strand within a chat tendril. That was an offshoot from a chat side growth, to be honest. But
what's the trunk of this?
Well, that's the trunk. Well, the trunk is what we're all trying to find, isn't it? I think. Yeah.
We're all looking for ring one.
Oh, yeah. What's the first ring?
Are you trying to make some myths, right? You were myth-making about the podcast.
First of all, I better quickly do the Millennium Falcon thing, which is just because I've raised its head. I was given the Millennium Falcon toy. It was one of the greatest moments of my life. Mm-hmm. I could see, reaching out ahead of me, you know, a good half decade of joy.
Mm-hmm. Until you were 71?
People,
right?
Well, for fuck's sake.
It's not Ben's fault. His internal humidity is up to 98% now.
Also, you said half decade, didn't you, rather than half century?
It was a real lurch. He said half decade, yeah. You made a massive lurch in terms of.
I should have said until he was 26.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm not going. Sorry, again, not speaking.
You're even doing the dad joke wrong.
Oh, God.
Which I think is a sign that it's not all your own fault, I think.
Yeah, no, Ben's not in control of himself.
Although,
no.
Good news, my internal organs have gone down to the age of 62. 62.
I've got you only 62 internally. You know, we do all have an internal body age, but it's different from our external body age.
Henry's beefcake journey.
Okay, well, that's another thing we need to get back to.
Yeah.
Well, no, the Millennium Falcon moment was just, I was given the Millennium Falcon toy. Great toy. You lift the lid off and you can see the internal structure of the Millennium Falcon. Yeah, which is just one big room, essentially, in the toy. Yeah.
It's the L-shaped sitting room of space, isn't it, basically? But it's horseshoe-shaped.
That's right, you're right. Which they've done, and essentially they've knocked it through to make it seem more roomy, and it really works. And also, in keeping with the Star Wars mythology, no cupboards and no toilets.
Mm-hmm.
So Han Solo can be coming up with some plans to find a universe with a toilet in it. Absolutely desperate. God, I really am hot. I tell you what, I'm hot.
Come on, push on through. And then?
Oh, yeah, and then. So anyway, it was Christmas. It was the same. So it was Christmas Day. I was playing with the toy. Same day I'd been given it. I was playing with the toy, loving it. And my mum stood on the Millennium Falcon, permanently breaking off its cockpit.
Oh, God.
So full shoe. It was a full indoor shoe, stand on. So the cockpit, which is the one external, so there's one indoor room where they do everything else, and then there's the external cockpit, which has, I don't know if you remember, has a window.
It's its own little bit. Yeah,
it's its own little bit. It has a window slash lid you can lift off.
Mm.
Chewbacca can go in there. If he's doing a number two for a shot, I assume, go in there. A bit like Ben's Hyundai. Close the top.
Put a CD on, let rip.
Put a CD on, let rip. Well, Han Solo presumably is doing the same thing in the main section. Again, it's his universe without toilets. Yeah, so anyway, she stood on it. She broke it off. So the lid bit didn't close on. The lid, the top of the cockpit essentially was broken off. And obviously it wasn't returnable because you can't return and get a refund or an exchange on something which you stood on, even if it is day one. So we had to patch up a solution involving sellotape. So from then on, from day one. Yeah? We're talking less than half an hour of pure play time with this thing. Day one, that thing has got a huge chunk of sellotape holding the top of the cockpit on. It doesn't hold it on straight. That's impossible. Every time you open it a bit, you hear the crunching, the cracking of the sellotape.
Don't you mean galactic tape?
It's galacto tape, Henry. If anything, it's even better. Think about it. It's transparent futuristic technology, Henry. I mean,
Henry, if you're truthful with yourself, were you playing with your Millennium Falcon in a silly place?
Dad.
Were you in a thoroughfare?
Well, it was.
Were you in a doorway?
It was. Yeah, I think there was talk that it was quite near a doorway, which is a good lesson. Well, it was a lesson I learned the hard way.
And also, you've got to consider that, you know, how happy you were before it happened. You're just coming off the back of, what, only 3 months before you graduated from university?
Oh, hey, come on, yeah.
There we go.
Nice. That's good because you've added to it, haven't you? You've added 5 years on. It's getting better. The joke's getting better.
I'm not added 5 years on.
No, because you said I was 21 before. When did you finish university? Oh, yeah.
How long did it take you to graduate?
I've just revealed it.
Your gap hemi-decade.
Yeah, Mum, Dad, I think I just need 5 or 6 years just to...
To get over to process the Millennium Falcon thing. I'm going to have to go to India for a long time to get over this. I'm going to have to speak to the wisest...
Australian tourists I can find.
The wisest and the most authentic Australian tourists to give me the wisdom. I'll just get over it, Mike. Damn, how the fuck come on, you fucking hell.
No, I know what you mean.
Yes. I will study at your feet for the next 3 years.
Right, so we've covered that story. What did that have to do with the myth-making that you were trying to do?
No idea.
You're talking about how this podcast began.
Yes, it began. So the problem I was addressing right at the beginning I was suggesting that we should do our actual small talk after we finish recording the podcast, is when the three of us should shed our pod personas, become our actual selves, mm-hmm. which is Ben Mega Jock.
Southern Bell.
Mike Southern Bell.
Mm-hmm. And Henry the criminally inclined Ibiza style techno dub DJ.
Yeah.
Henzone. That's right. Welcome to the Henzone. 6:30 a.m. Most of you have gone home, like, you're thinking about brunch options. And I have to keep my volume on 4. That doesn't stop it being the Hen Zone.
So you're the DJ at the breakfast buffet. DJ and egg chef.
He's still living that 90s dream.
Yeah.
Not over.
Still the only DJ in Ibiza who can poach an egg on a turntable while playing house music. How'd you want your egg spun? That's just a display egg. I can't actually do that. Sorry, mate.
And I've ruined another turntable.
I do request musically, but the eggs, you will have to get the eggs from the main buffet. All right, cheers.
So after the show, once we shed our pod personas,
We do some small talk. What's been happening is we've been doing our small talk before the actual show, which then made me think of the mythology of our podcast, which it started at the National Theatre, didn't it?
On the main stage at the Olivier.
Main stage at the Olivier.
Mike was playing Hamlet.
I was playing Macbeth.
And I was playing King Lear. It was the ultimate mashup.
It was the ultimate Shakespearean mashup. It was that brief trend, wasn't it?
It was the GCSE triple, basically. Cram in the GCSE students. Absolutely cram them in. We're going to get this stuff done.
It's easier, and we can't stress this enough, if we have proof this is easier than just reading York notes. It's easier than York notes. You watch the triple bill.
Yeah. But they happen concurrently, right? So each story plays out alongside the other.
Hambeth.
King Hambeth.
It was King Hambeth. And of course, but in this version, King Lear's daughters were the Great Gatsby, Nicholas Nickleby, and
Gawain and the Green Knight.
And Gawain and the Green Knight, both of them. Yeah.
Just in case, with Pam and Bluebell doing a version of Romeo and Juliet in the foyer, if that was on your syllabus.
It was heady times, wasn't it? It was
a great money spinner.
It was a great money spinner.
And then it became obviously the Merry Wives of King Hambeth
and his daughters, Gawain and the Green Knight, the Great Gatsby, and Nicholas Nickleby
and Cressida.
Yeah, and Cressida at the end.
Yeah, it was when we tried to incorporate solvents and boiling points that I think it got too much. Once we crossed the subject barrier,
you can't cross the subject barrier.
It was too much.
Yeah.
The whole thing was taking place next to an oxbow lake, and they spent a lot of time talking about what that was.
Yeah, we did manage to incorporate geography. And of course, everybody in the cast, all of our costumes were made out of magnesium strips, weren't they? Thin magnesium.
The end of the show was someone else.
The end of the show. When we jumped into the oxbow lake.
That's why they insisted they had to float out the show onto the Thames. We had to leave the actual building itself.
It was, put it this way. It was... I'd call it a dog's breakfast, but that would be an insult both to breakfasts and dogs. 2 stars, the Evening Standard. Isn't it? We got
some of the historically worst GCSE results on record.
Yeah.
So that's how we met.
You know, that's how we met, wasn't it? I was doing that. Yeah, we'd meet up, you know, working on like a, you know, write to write, essentially, to do something else. And then we'd chat a bit at the beginning. And in a way, I like to think that that's when I had the idea for Three Bean Salad Podcast. All of its segments. And that's when I, mentally at least, copyrighted certainly the four main format points and internally sent myself a letter saying that I own certainly all merchandising, reproduction, film, TV, animation, and declare myself as the copyright owner of all the jingles, I'm afraid. as well.
What I don't like about what you've just said, Henry, partly is that you've sewn up, from a business point of view, you've sewn up the podcast to the
degree. I've sewn it up.
You know, me and Mike, you know, we get nothing out of this.
Because of the way that we record the podcast now, you can't delete this recording.
No. But also, the thing that's most egregious is the way that you suggested that the reason we're doing the podcast is because we were all having a chat and you thought, do you know what? This needs to be broadcast. This small talk.
This is almost, I mean, forget the question of where on earth does it all come from? I mean, we're never answering that. And also, take it as read, but we're absolutely nuts. I mean, do you remember when we'd be at the National and we'd go, because we did used to meet up with, and work in the National. It was a way of telling our parents, I'm off to the National again.
But really, we were just using the foyer for the free sort of Wi-Fi.
We were using the free foyer.
It was free.
Some of the stairwells.
And then you'd spend quite a lot of money on like chocolate-covered nuts. That's right. And stuff in the cafe. Yeah.
And I'd tell you what, I'd say to the woman I was buying, I almost don't need to buy nuts. I've got a couple of prime ones upstairs I'm currently chatting to. All right.
Might as well just cover there in chocolate.
I've done with it. Honestly, where does it come from?
What?
No, but that isn't how it happened. But it is a bit like the chat, you know, it's a bit like just the chat and stuff that we used to do. Now I feel, because we do the podcast, there's a thing where it's like the thing that we have to do today is record the podcast. So then before, there's now another chat window where we chat a bit before the podcast.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you want to turn that into a podcast?
Well, in theory we could. And in theory it would actually be an even greater finer distillation of the pure essence of what this is, isn't it?
There would be quite a lot of private information here.
A lot of private information. Yeah, there'd be a lot of...
There'd be a lot of recordings of Ben and I waiting for you, looking at a blank screen where you've activated the chat and you're just simply not there. But we can hear a sort of frothy coffee machine going in the background.
Activate chat, run off, piss, make a coffee, second piss, short walk...
By which time the duck is done.
And then the duck's ready for its first basting. I tell you what, those potatoes, actually, they come up absolutely perfect every time. So I don't know what you're complaining about.
So as we reach the end of this introduction section, yep. What was the point you were trying to make?
And in a way, that is the point. Nice one.
Time to turn on the beam machine. This week's topic, as sent in by WMG, is orange.
Ah. A word which famously rhymes with lozenge.
And syringe.
And blorange, which is a hill near Abergavenny.
Is it?
Yeah, the blorange.
The blorange hill?
It says called the blorange. It's a hill.
Have you mounted the blorange?
I've never mounted the blorange, I don't think. Nor have I climbed it.
Oh, come on.
Hey.
That's a joke about somebody trying to have sex with a hill.
It is very hot.
Really is. I'm looking at the Blorange Hill in Wales.
I've never heard of the Blorange. I've been through and in Abergavenny many, many times in my life, but I've somehow missed the whole Blorange thing has passed me by. I've just got to stop and take time sometimes, guys.
That's it.
It's all too pacey.
Because sometimes there's a blorange right under your nose.
Yeah, and you're boosting your way to Crick Howl and you're not even looking.
Yeah.
Life is not a rehearsal. I can't stress that enough. And if it is a rehearsal, it's like a tech. It's a late tech, you know, the final tech.
Sort of dress tech. They put the dress and the tech into one in the end because they've run out of time.
It's the dress tech. They've run out of time.
The crew are getting cheesed off because the trains are going to stop in a minute. And is there a budget for a Premier Inn?
Exactly.
No, not for the crew, as per.
And none of the GCSE students have bought tickets, so no one's coming. The thing is, in life, sometimes you are at a rehearsal.
And then life is a rehearsal. That's a good point. Yeah, I'm looking at the Boranger, but it's kind of, you know, it's not very nice. Just, well, I could say this kind of thing about bits of nature and stuff. But I mean, I think for me, that's, I'm looking at it and thinking, yeah, I'm probably will give that a miss, I imagine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hills out there.
There's only one Blorange.
I mean, what
are your top hills then? What are the hills you...
Well, Snowdon, Kilimanjaro, K2.
Well, these are mountains, my friend.
Yeah, but as I said, it's not a rehearsal.
Are you going to skip hills entirely? Don't do hills.
Don't do hills, do go mountains. Straight to mountains.
Yeah. No hills, no tours, no knolls.
None of that stuff. No hillocks.
It says on Wikipedia, most visitors are walkers and sightseers. Some come to see the grave of Sir Harry Llewellyn's famous show-jumping horse, Fox Hunter, who won Britain's only gold medal in the 1952 Summer Olympics.
The only medal went to a horse. that's a really bad.
And he was murdered soon after for it and buried in the hill.
I think I will be driving past the Blorange tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Where are you taking going? The Blorange. I'm going to Hale-Mwy tomorrow.
Oh, you lovely. What's happening in Hale-Mwy?
I've got a friend who lives in California,
mm-hmm.
and they're coming over for a holiday to Wales, and they're staying near Hale-Mwy.
Wow.
And I've got to say, there's a bit of a weird thing with it, which is they're from California, right? Which in terms of kind of natural beauty, sort of has it all, I would say.
Yeah. 3 mile high trees, for example.
Yes. Deserts.
Mountains, beaches. It's got the works, everything in between.
Again, no offence to the Blorange itself or any Blorangers, but that is not even getting a name in California. That's not named. That's not a named hill.
Well, that'll be flattened and they'll build a road across it.
That'll be a road. Yeah.
They might prop up a drive-in movie screen against it.
Yeah.
That's about it.
So, yeah, so she's come over from California. And so she messaged me and sort of said, you know, what would you recommend? And it's just like, guys, none of it's going to be quite as good as the stuff you've got in California, really.
Where is the Welsh version of Hollywood? Where is Wallywood?
Yeah.
Where is that?
Yeah. Where's the Wallywood sign? Well, what happened in the golden age of Wallywood? Are there any lovely buildings left over from the golden age of Wallywood?
I think she's more after sort of natural beauty, I think.
Okay.
But California sort of nails that pretty hard as well.
Yes.
Well, it's got the redwoods.
Exactly.
Well, and it's got the
bears.
Yeah.
Famously. They even make it to the flag.
Maybe she's just looking forward to a kind of bear free hike.
Well, they've got bears on their flags, and they actually have bears.
We've got dragons on the flag, and we've actually got dragons.
You're not expecting to see a dragon, I hope.
Is there a bear on the flag of California? Yeah.
Sure is.
Really
mate.
Good flag.
That is good. It's very communist looking, isn't it? The California. It's a big Russian looking bear and a big red star.
So basically, I just want to make sure they have a nice time in Wales. I might have to sort of rig up a projector of some sort on a huge screen, and then project maybe California onto it. I think Wales is nice enough, but when people come, I'm always like, you could go somewhere.
I think you're doing the classic indigenous person talking trash to the hometown. Yeah, and around Hayes is super lush. She's going
to
be okay.
Yeah, but is it worth flying from the Pacific to? That's my question.
Well, you've got the fact that things are old, aren't they? That's always good.
I think castles is going to be the key.
Although castles, it doesn't work for mountains and stuff because the earth is all the same age.
Although that doesn't work very well for Haycastle because they've done it up, haven't they? Half of that's new now. There's basically a very old wall around which there's a very nice sort of modern new glass bookshop.
Ah.
And cafeteria.
Oh, no. Ah. Yeah, that's no good. Ah. No, the castles, to be honest, Ben, you can make up any old shit, to be honest. Anything Arthurian, just go, this is where Gwyneth of Paltrow...
Slid the first door.
just make up stuff. Because the thing is, I know what you mean, that you feel a bit inferiority complex or something. But the fact is, they love it all, don't they? Americans, they absolutely love everything. They love everything Welsh, Scottish, English. They just love it all.
Because I even got this with I've got another friend who's also coming over from California this week or next week to go to London. Now, obviously London, you know, Henry, you know better than anyone. London's a place you'd fly from Mars to get to. It's, you know,
oh yeah,
especially if you can get cheap tickets for Phantom from the half price ticket.
Well, they do say that if anywhere has been discovered by aliens, it probably is London
because they'd go to see Abba Voyage.
We you Well, Abovoid is the ultimate honey trap, isn't it, for aliens? What it was, I think, what they weren't expecting when they started Abovoid was that what's he called again?
Bjorn,
the guy from the Rest Is Politics.
Alistair Campbell.
Yeah, now Alistair Campbell's been about six times.
Is he?
To Abovoid. That's weird.
Is he an alien?
He's obsessed with it. I don't know.
I really want to go to Abovoid. So we're doing our London podcast festival shows. I think this episode is going out after we've done them. So thanks for coming. What a good time we all had.
Oh. Fucking hell. Where does it come from? I honestly don't know.
And thanks to our special guests, Jimmy Nesbitt, Nicholas Lyndhurst,
and Paul Dacre,
former editor of the Daily Mail. So we're recording this before this, but it will go out after that. I'm considering going to Abovoyage.
Well, you're considering going in retrospect?
Or instead of?
Instead of doing the live show?
Yeah.
But we've done the live shows. Hey, what reality? No. Can I say, those three shows were great, weren't they? And weirdly, we weren't as tired as I thought we were going to be for the second one on the Sunday. I thought we were going to be absolute dog shit.
Well, you find it, don't you? Old Doctor Show.
You find it. And our whole thing about, which you guys didn't believe in, that I said we should do, where we dress up as a nut bar, and it's like, hey, nut, nut, nut. Where's it come from? You're nuts. I am nuts. You're a nut. Hey, get your nuts off of a nut. Nut, nut, nut. Nut jobs. Nut.
Sorry, Henry, you can't say dress up as a nut bar because a nut bar isn't... What's a nut bar?
That was one of the issues you had with it. I said, it's not literal, Ben. It doesn't matter. We're not literally beans, are we? It's not literal.
So like a pub, but you get nuts instead of beer.
A half a pint of cashews, please.
It's a bar for squirrels. If squirrels had their own...
Right, squirrel top.
If squirrels had their own metropolis.
And is that why Paul Dacre, the former editor of the Daily Mail, was dressed as a giant squirrel?
It was a very alpha move, wasn't it, given the vibe?
He said he'd only turn up and do it if he was dressed as a squirrel. We had to come up with the idea around that.
Nut's ultimate predator.
Are you considering going to Abovoyage before or after?
Well.
And I wonder, by the time they've listened to this, the audience, if it was true or not. If he did go.
Well, moments before you started recording this podcast, I was on the Abovoyage website trying to...
Oh, really? As per?
And I was thinking, maybe I could go on the Sunday evening. So we finish our second live show.
Yeah.
And then I could whisk myself straight to Abovoyage.
Oh.
What an amazing day that would be. Unfortunately... It's not possible unless I can get one of the avatars to be me for the final Three Bean Sad live show.
All we have to do is swap it, right? They can use the same technology. It's all set up.
Yeah.
You just change the data input.
So the live show for Three Bean Sad will be Mike, Henry and Agnetha. And then I'll be on stage at Abovoyage.
Who's going to be beamed in. They just have to change the GPS settings.
Exactly.
We just have to sort of drill a hole in the ceiling of the venue that we're at.
And they'll beam it through.
Yeah.
And we can keep the... they don't have to change the settings for the internal organ age. We know that.
That's true. That's something.
We can still... It's still sort of 70-ish, isn't it?
Yeah.
We know that from the intro.
But I could go on Monday. I think I'm going to stay overnight in London, so I could go on Monday. But then I'm thinking, is going to Abovoyage on your own okay? Aren't you meant to go with a gaggle of girls or Alistair Campbell?
One or the other. What you want is... Who you want to go with is the best friend girl character from a TV show.
Yeah.
So, Sally, she wears leopard skin leggings.
Mm-hmm.
Fun. Fun.
Keep saying fun.
Is she fun?
She got fun.
Fungal knees. That's why she can't wear shorts, hence the leggings.
Which from those leopard skin tights.
Even in this weather, which is actually making it worse, tragically.
Fungal knees. She's got fungal knees. You've got that wrong. She's got fungal knees that you only need to find out about in the sixth episode.
She still loves her.
She still loves her. But bloody hell, you want to have the windows open when she's around.
He's basically a year seven mushroom, that kid.
What you want to know, you want to go to that with the best friend, female best friend character from film. So, leopard skin leggings, fun jewellery.
Okay, yeah.
Hair's a bit all over the place. Oh, a couple of glasses of wine last night, silly me. Yeah.
She's just been fired again from a sort of yoga admin job.
Oh, unlucky in love, but absolute rock when it comes to it, you know.
Yeah.
But that's who you want to go with, isn't it?
Gutsy and Northern.
Oh, lovely. Nice touch.
Gutsy and Northern when she needs to be. Let's put it that way.
But effete and southern when it's appropriate.
Exactly.
Yes, what happens, I need to have gone through a breakup. I mean, I don't want this to happen.
Yeah.
But maybe my partner can temporarily break up with me just for the Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'll be going, oh no, I've broken up. I can't believe it, love of my life. And then this character comes in and goes, hey,
listen,
cheer up, we're going to see ABBA Voyage. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you're from Surrey, you've never been north of Watford. She's like, doesn't matter, just book up. Cheer up and book up.
Yeah.
All right.
We go and see ABBA Voyage. I have a sort of experience where I get my self-confidence back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she'll be like, and if you get peckish at one point in the gig, you start feeling a bit lightheaded and getting a bit sad about the breakup of your relationship, she'll be like, don't worry, I've got a handful of pancetta in my handbag.
I think you've broken the character there. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That stacked up at all. Handful of pancetta. I think your Islington upbringing is coming through.
It's not in a handbag. She's got a bum bag, this one. It's a bum bag, fanny pack type.
She's got a bum bag, but she wears it as a handbag because she's a little bit, you know, she's just a little bit zany. She's a bit.
But wouldn't it be full of sort of like Melton Mowbray pork pies or?
Well, no,
I think it'd be a vegan option, frankly. I think it might be Skittles.
Maybe it's Skittles.
I think this character's falling apart.
Yeah. It's well, this is what I say, that, you know, there's often a lot of these parts are underwritten. Yeah.
Well, there's a strike on, isn't there, to be fair?
That is true. On.
Hasn't affected us, though, has it? Hasn't affected the beans. Still there.
Well, it's because we haven't had any work apart from this, isn't it?
And it has actually affected me.
Of course, because you were going to be in the second series of the remake of Sex and the City, weren't you?
That's right.
As a Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
As an HBO Disney mashup.
I love that Welsh guy. So hard to believe he's actually 69. Internally.
Anyway, so I might go and see ABBA Voyage. It's quite expensive, though.
How much is it?
To stand up, I think they cloak the idea you're standing up by calling it the dancing arena, but I think it means standing up.
Yeah,
that's bullshit.
That's like 80 quid. That's already too much. Yeah. And if you want to sit down, it's like 180 quid.
Bloody hell. My word. I mean, that's got to be the gig of a lifetime, hasn't it?
Yeah, but Mike, you're literally not seeing ABBA.
I know. It's like, how many times can you say that you've done that in your life? Literally not seen them. Yeah, I do. I mean, I sort of want to see it. What's the crowd going to be like, do you think?
Maybe everyone. Quite tourist heavy, maybe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does it happen elsewhere in the world? Or is this the only one?
Only one.
The fact that Alistair Campbell's been six times, is quite. What's that about? And how does that inform our understanding of New Labour at this point? and its legacy?
I'm going to see a musical on Tuesday then, afterwards. I'm staying in London for a few days and sort of having a London experience.
You really are, aren't you? What's the musical?
I'm going to see Operation Mincemeat.
Oh, that's supposed
to... Oh, I'm very jealous of that. I want to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to the matinee on Tuesday. Can't wait.
Nice.
Can't wait.
What else are you doing?
London Aquarium. Obviously, the Shrek experience. Have you seen there's a Shrek experience?
No, but have you heard that Shrek musicals had to be cancelled because of the concrete thing?
What?
Yeah, there's a production of Shrek the musical, which has had to be cancelled because of the concrete scandal.
We might have to explain the concrete scandals to some of our abroad listeners.
Basically, lots of people have been building schools, largely, and it turns out some theatres with some quite spongy, naff concrete several decades ago. And this has all come out. Everyone's worried that these roofs are going to fall on their heads, which has meant some schools closing down. But most tragically of all, as Henry's pointed out, has meant the temporary postponement of Shrek the Musical, with all of its knock-on impacts for the economy at large.
I mean, yeah, we're bracing for a recession, I would imagine, off the back of this.
I mean, Shrek the Musical was, I think, the only thing keeping Britain afloat, wasn't it? Certainly the only thing keeping us in the G9, wasn't it, with Shrek the Musical?
It was certainly our final bargaining chip with Putin, wasn't it? That's gone now.
Yeah. Sadly, certainly the plans for a Shrek the Musical pipeline have been shelved. I mean, that'll never be.
We're a nation on its arse now. We're a nation on its arse. Yeah. The Blorange is now our top tourist attraction.
Yeah.
And soon we'll find that the Blorange is made of spongy concrete as well. Any final orange thoughts?
You've reminded me, I do have a short plum anecdote. Or should I say a short plums anecdote?
It looks like his blood has turned cold.
So it's a very quick anecdote.
You've said that before, Henry. And there's a trust problem now.
No, this genuinely is. It's not even an anecdote, frankly.
Well, it started with a plum anecdote, and it's already expanded to a plums anecdote. This is what's making me anxious.
Okay. It's a punnet of plums anecdote.
It's a plum orchard-based saga.
The saga of ye field de plum trees. It's a medieval tale. No, I popped into a posh grocer's. Yeah, this was in London, to get to buy a couple of plums. This just sounds like a nursery rhyme, doesn't it? He popped into a grocery store to buy a couple of plums. And what happened was, there was someone in the queue. There was a few people in the queue. I just popped in front of the person at the front of the queue because I knew that this is a grocer's where it can take quite a while to get served. They tend to gas on a lot.
Oh, awful. God, imagine.
What? All right. Come on. So I just snuck in. I did that thing where I went straight to the woman serving, and I said, "I just need to get a couple of plums, and I'll be on my way. Do you mind?" So I just snuck in, and so I snuck to the front, essentially, just said, "Do you mind? I'm just getting two plums."
Sorry, what do you mean? You went to the front of the queue.
The bed. I was only getting a couple of plums. Come on,
doesn't matter.
Well, because everyone else was queuing up, and they were getting their weekly fruit, were they? What's the idea?
Well, there was a person in the queue that had masses of fruit and veg, and it's a place where they weigh it individually, so it takes ages. So I just said, "Do you mind? I just need to get these two plums." And it was at that point that I realised that the person at the front of the queue, who I just snuck in front of, was Sophie Ellis Bextor. Sophie Ellis Bextor. It was Sophie Ellis.
Yeah.
It was Sophie Ellis Bextor.
Play the jingle.
Soho, Battersea, Old Southwark, Streatham, Vauxhall, Tufnell Park,
Barnet, technically,
Madame Two Swords,
the Cenotaph,
Halfords, Zone 5.
Mind the gap between your provincial existence and this metropolitan utopia. Next stop, urban enlightenment.
The glamorous London life of Henry Bacher.
Hang on a second. Is that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? No, it can't be. Because you're Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. I know! What's that song again?
It's Murder on the Dance Floor.
Yeah.
You better not steal the groove,
the
DJ.
Plums on the dance floor. You better not jump in the queue.
And did she unleash a torrent of foul language?
No, I think, to be honest, she took it reasonably well. She did have quite a few kids and stuff with her. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a slight element of, you are pushing in here. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have pushed in if I'd known it was in front of a leading London celebrity. I probably wouldn't have done. But anyway, so I looked out, I clocked, it's Sophie Ellis Bextor. But at that point, I had two plums in my hands. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you do? I just went ahead. I think I fulfilled the cutting in. I bought the plums. And I was on my way. What would you have done in that situation? Isn't it?
Do email in.
You know, like, everyone is someone in Sex and the City.
Right.
We've already discussed this.
Yeah.
I'm Miranda. Mike's Miranda. Ben's Gustav. We've already discussed this. Everyone is someone in the Sophie Ellis Bextor and the Two Plums and Henry story, aren't they?
Some people are the plums.
Some people are the plums.
Some people are the impatient toddlers.
And some people are the creators of one of those eternal Ibiza bangers.
So that's oranges, I think.
I think so.
Orange.
Orange.
Blorange. Time for your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your hoof.
My beautiful horse.
Today's emails all have a theme, and the theme is people vying to get the record of geographical records vis-a-vis listening to the podcast in various geographical locations.
Ooh, okay.
There are various records. The first one that we talked about was about altitude.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ari writes, Dear Beans, I'm listening with much amusement to your banter about Mount Evans in Colorado. I know the mountain well, having spent summers of my youth attending a Jewish sleepaway camp upon its slopes. You speculated about how high the road goes. It is, in fact, the highest paved road in North America. I think we were told that last time.
I don't remember.
Sure, yeah.
The last time I was up there was in the summer of 2012, with a British friend of mine, with whom a few weeks later I would become amorous.
Oh. Why wasn't that British person at home celebrating the London Olympics?
Good point. Why were they enjoying Super Saturday and getting behind Jess Ennis?
They should have been supporting Team GB.
Yeah.
Ping pong, javelin,
weird equestrian stuff.
We decided that our summer loving was not complete on the North American leg, and I visited here in London a few weeks later, around the time of the 2012 Olympics.
Oh, nice. Oh,
there we go.
But then they did, I guess, after the 2012 Olympics, they said, no, the loving is now over.
So they're not together anymore?
I don't think so.
Does he give any details of the sexual medal haul?
You want to know if he podiumed?
At any rate, I have a lifetime's worth of happy memories from Mount Evans. A lifetime's worth.
Bloody hell.
And a lifetime ban from attending Olympic events.
At any rate, I have a lifetime's worth of happy memories from Mount Evans, and I'm happy to have you discuss it. Cheers, Ari. Okay. So there we go.
Okay.
Very good.
If you've banged on a mountain, why not email in?
And what? Also, what's the highest paved road you've ever banged on? And then she came back with him to visit him in London for the Olympics.
I felt like the paved road of Mount Evans had laid the groundwork somehow for the two of them. They felt able to seal the deal in the atmosphere of the 2012 Olympics, which was a tremendous atmosphere. after the credit crunch and all we'd been through and austerity of the previous few years, the national mood was lifted briefly.
And I'm assuming while they were making love, Ari was doing the Mobot. Do you remember the Mobot?
I assume they both were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely bit of blue there from Ari, really. It's really, we don't get a lot of blue, do we?
Well, it's not, I think we made it bluer than it was. All he said was become amorous. And he used the phrase summer loving.
But he knew that we and the listeners would be filling in all kinds of gaps there. Ari has shown himself to be a very strong writer of erotic nonfiction.
And then they would have got on so well that he would have said, come back to London. The Olympics are happening.
She's from London. He went to London.
Mm-hmm. Okay, he went to visit her. Yeah. So it's that summer. It's a summer loving thing that's gone quite well because there's a return visit almost instantly.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's the Olympics. It's a great time to be alive. The medal hall is superb. Mm. Archery.
Cycling.
Running.
Throwing.
Leaping.
Bounding.
Daniel Craig is Bond. It's a great time. He's in his pomp, isn't he, as Bond? And that thing where it felt like the Queen was going into the stadium on a parachute, that would have been a hell of a thing to watch, you know, while experiencing young love. But I suspect what then happened was there a post-Olympics come down, maybe for the two of them.
I think probably their relationship was a bit like the velodrome, quite hard to maintain, you know.
But I think like the velodrome, I think no one expected this to be a permanent fixture.
Nice.
Exactly. And maybe it was there a bit longer than anyone thought it would be.
And probably now it's covered in moss.
Well, I do think actually the velodrome, we've kept the velodrome up, so it was a bad metaphor. More like the aquatic centre from the Rio Olympics, which has now gone back to nature, I think.
Very good. Or the volleyball courts on Horse Guards Parade.
Yes, that's better. Much better. Yes. Thank you for your email, Ari, which essentially was just a sort of brag, basically, wasn't it? It was just a brag.
Mm. It was, wasn't it?
A boastful, erotic brag.
It got our juices, though, flowing, though, didn't it?
It really did.
It certainly did.
Bloody hell.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content. Content.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
Time to address the records. Although we could give Ari a record maybe for highest banging on a paved road. I don't know.
But not even while listening to the podcast. Highest banging. It should be highest banging on a paved road while listening to the podcast, shouldn't it?
Yes. I don't think Ari was listening. It was pre-figured the podcast.
It was pre-pod, wasn't it?
Anyway, let's get on to the actual records. This is from George. Dear Beans, I want to add my contribution to the highest listener table. I recently returned from a holiday to Ladakh in the far north of India. At several times, we crossed over high mountain passes where workers were rebuilding the road by hand, right in front of us. The highest of these passes was Tang Lang La, recorded at 5,328 metres.
Blimey.
That's pretty high. Is that higher than everything we've had so far?
That is. So Mount Evans was something like 4,600 or something, wasn't it? So this is smashing out the park. Whilst waiting for the road to be built and slowly losing my mind due to the altitude, I maintained my sanity by chuckling along to your insightful podcast. Keep up the good work, George.
Well done, George.
I'm looking at a photo from Tang Lang La.
Yeah.
And it's from an area that is so high. There's no trees. It's just totally barren because it's so high. And there's a sign that says, welcomes you at Tang Lang La, top 17,582 feet. And then it says, great courage and will of steel is the norm. It's quite a good subtitle for our podcast, maybe.
So I thought that at 5,328 metres, that George would probably be the winner forever.
You would think a Himalayan adventure would do the trick, wouldn't you?
But then we received this email from Phil. Last September, I was listening to the pod at 5,364 metres at Everest Base Camp.
No.
What?
Yes.
Wow. Who's Phil? I want to meet Phil.
He's pipped George by 36 metres, I think.
Yeah, he has.
And that's just the base camp.
Okay, more records. David writes, Dear Beans, you may remember me as being the only listener so far that you've told to go fuck themselves. Anyway, apparently you exhorted him to go to one of the remotest places on Earth and think long and hard about what you've done.
What had he said initially?
He said that you've got some general knowledge blind spots. So you told him to go to one of the remotest places on Earth. Then he writes, so, not 3 months hence, I embarked with my father on a journey to Longyearbyen, the most northern town on the planet, on the archipelago of Svalbard.
Oh, wow.
So he actually took me at my word.
From there, we took a boat trip to the abandoned Russian coal mining settlement of Pyramidion, some 50 miles further north again. During this boat trip, I enjoyed accompanying my scanning of the horizon for polar bears with the smooth, lukewarm tones of my three favourite beans.
Wow.
I would therefore like to claim the most northerly listening to of Three Bean Salad. I will, of course, also accept being told to go and fuck myself again by Henry. Kind regards, David.
That's a good one, David. I like that. Because we've had Jazz the polar scientist, I think has been in Svalbard, but I don't know if they've then gone that extra 50 miles.
Well, Mike, we've also had an email from Jazz the polar scientist.
Oh, really? Oh, there we go. Okay.
Hello from the world's northernmost community, Nye Eilson, Svalbard.
Okay.
Blimey.
So we'll have to work out who actually got furthest north.
I'm wondering if Jazz and David might have even crossed paths, because there can't be many people around there. I mean, if you're queuing in that greengrocers.
It's true.
So unclear, I think, as to who gets that record. Maybe hash it out amongst yourselves.
Yeah. Some sort of duel under the Northern Lights.
Yes.
Or just email and let us know.
Yeah, take your pick.
So there's the emails.
It's a good clutch. I enjoyed that.
It made me feel a bit like I'm wasting my life, though. Like everyone seems to be going into these tunnels and going into the Arctic Circle.
Yes, I don't have a good answer for you there. I don't think I can help you there, pray.
But it can't be that good if when they get there, they listen to us talk about bags or whatever the episode might be about. So.
The thing is, that's the curse of the artist, Ben. You see, we're artists. You see, we don't get to take part in life. We merely banter about it.
I wouldn't describe this as art, Henry. 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 I wouldn't describe this as art, Henry.
It's time to pay the ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patreon.com/threebeansalad. We do a monthly bonus episode. We do other little things. We did an unboxing video last week.
We did.
And also, if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge from Mike Wozniak. And Mike, I believe you spent last night at the Sean Bean Lounge.
I absolutely did, to the maximum. Because, of course, last night it was the...
Omelette Rodeo?
It was the Omelette Rodeo. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
It was the Omelette Rodeo last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, with eggs supplied by Richard Churchill's free-range geckos, the 3D egg printer Christina Bergman found on a road trip through Area 51, and David Haynes's strangely large people-pleaser chicken, Ben, who isn't named after Ben Marsh, Ben Hambro, Ben McPherson, or even Ben, who just goes by Ben, but after Emily Julin, whose nom de graffiti when vandalising municipal signage is Ben. Barrel racing was the first event, with Mark Hinch competitive on the back of a cheese and ham omelette he broke in last year, Lynn Carter tipping the barrel early doors on a pumpkin and halloumi number, and Alex Chandler-Zoo cornering impressively with a single-egg microwave mug omelette. Best time, however, went to Tom Hachevsky, who breezed through the course on an almost cloud-like souffle-style feta and sun-dried tomato. In the Roughstock events, Brendan Stone made a prize pillock out of himself by saddling a quiche, and Sam Heffer was double disqualified for doping a custard tart. Alex S. successfully barebacked an unset frittata, and John Strohmeyer wrestled a Denver omelette onto its side in less than 90 seconds, breaking Keenan Hahn's record by 38 minutes. A yolkless Spanish omelette got the better of Michael Green, David Thayer, and James, the last of whom was bucked into Patrick Hirano before he'd even put his chaps off. Incapacitated, Patrick was unable to haze Richard's long-horned Western omelette, which veered off into the open beast chute, accidentally left open by Charlie Brooks, who was busy with a wordle, and gored Harry Kidd until he was more smoothie than man. There was further trouble elsewhere as Anna triggered a Provençal omelette cake stampede with injudicious spicy condiment usage, Michael Fairclough was trampled to death by an egg foo young that Edward Watkes had left untethered, and Timothy Walker got snagged in the flank strap of Alexander Pashby's omelette tortilla breakfast wrap and dragged into the car park, where he totaled Heather Colbert's motorbike inside it. By contrast, Jazz goat-tied Chris John to a spinach and Bombay potato, Nicholas Speechley double-freehanded a bronking tamagoyaki, and they said it couldn't be done, but Hannah Vitesse roped an unsuccessful avocado omelette with less than 5% soft egg spillage. Thanks all.
Right, that's the podcast. We will finish with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. And this week's is going to be from Jazz the Polar Scientist.
Ooh.
Thanks, Jazz.
They're in Svalbard. They write, according to my colleague Emily, the Polar Scientist, a couple of series ago I was supposed to bring Mike back a polar bear spleen. Sadly, I've not managed this. By the time I find somewhere with Wi-Fi to send this from, I'll probably be back in the UK. So I hope instead he'll accept this version of your theme tune in the style of early 2000s pop classical piano, e.g. Ludovico Einaudi.
In lieu of a spleen.
In lieu of a spleen. It may be the world's most northerly piano. It's good, isn't it?
Another record.
Nice.
But I'm prepared to be bollocked on this by someone from some temporary obscure army base in northern Canada. The piano is directly above the communal dining hall. I only had my phone recorder app and no editing software, limited internet use, so the quality might be the worst ever heard on the podcast. Enjoy.
Good on you, Jazz. And yes, absolutely. Let's consider honour satisfied, spleen-wise, and let's leave those polar bears in peace, I reckon.
I'm pretty excited to have a theme tune played on the world's most northerly piano. There's also a PS on the email. PS. The most provincial dad story of all time from their friend Emily the Polar Scientist.
Yes, please.
On a childhood family holiday, her dad drove them some way out of their way for an extra surprise. After arriving and trying and failing to get them to guess what the surprise was, he revealed it was the location of the emptiest square of land on the UK Ordnance Survey map.
Yes.
It's a nice idea for you to take the kids, Mike, and, you know.
I'm going to track that down. Emily, the polar scientist, I want to know where that is, please. And yes. Has that impacted on Emily's future career, seeking these fantastically empty spaces?
That's a good point.
Emily now works in the Barron. Might have been a formative experience.
That's a good point. So, Emily, if you do know where that is, I'd be really interested to know.
Yes, please.
So that's the podcast. We'll play it with Jazz's theme tune. Thanks for listening, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you, bye.
Cheerio.
Thank you.